Hello and welcome to the Gibraltar Business Podcast. I'm your host, David Ragliate. I'm joined by a different guest each week, and we discuss themes like leadership, business, balance, and explore some of the global issues that affect business right here in Gibraltar. If you already know the show, welcome back and thanks for listening. If you're just discovering the podcast, hello and welcome. Before we go any further, I'd like to ask you a favor. If you're enjoying the show, please like it on social media and hit follow on the player you are listening to the show from. This really helps us grow the show. The Gibraltar Business Podcast is brought to you by the GFSB and is sponsored by Gibraltar International Bank, an institution that shares our passion for business. On today's business podcast, we welcome Peter Isola. Peter is a senior partner of Gibraltar's oldest law firm known as Isola's LLP. Mr. Isola is also the chairman of the fiduciary group of companies. He also holds appointments as a non-executive director of various regulated entities in banking, financial services, telecommunications, and gaming. It was a real coup to get him on the show. Later in the episode, we meet Kirsten Andlaw from Thrive as One Consulting, who tells us about her work with organizations and her involvement in the upcoming GIBSAM's Wellbeing at Work Conference. Peter, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast.
Thank you for having me. Delighted.
Obviously, you know, many of our listeners will know who you are, will know of Isola's, but for those who don't, and for their benefit, can you tell us about Isola's?
Yes, sure. Well, Isola's is Gibraltar's oldest law firm. We trace our roots back to 1892, when my great-uncle set up with a great-great-uncle, I'm not sure, set up in practice in Gibraltar, and he was joined by my grandfather in 1921, and that then led on to the next generation, which was my father, Peter, who's relatively well-known, probably to many of your listeners, and my uncle, William. And after that came is the fourth generation, which is myself, my brother, Albert, who's just returned to the firm after 10 years as a government minister in financial services, gaming, and by the end, many other areas. Also my cousin Mark, so that's this generation, and then we have the next generation is already here with my daughter Katrina working with me and my nephew Nick as well, and not forgetting that's Nick Easter, my other nephew Joey Garcia, who's now a fintech ambassador. So that's the history, but we remain very much a family firm, and I think of all my partners, lawyers and employees as being part of that family. So today we're a relatively dynamic firm, over 100 people employed, 14 partners, over 30 lawyers, and including a highly valued consultants. I mentioned Joey Garcia just now, and also Jamie Trinidad, who's at Cambridge University, but is very, very much a part of the firm. So over the years, we've enjoyed pretty spectacular growth, and we feel very much a part of the community. Despite being the oldest law firm, we're always modernizing, and we recently restructured into a more modern limited liability partnership. So that was a significant milestone in the development of the firm. And obviously, you know, we're a general practice firm. We cover all the areas, very involved in the gambling and the DLT space, but also in all sorts of areas as well.
So law goes right through your family. what led you into law? You know, where did that come from? Was it a passion? Was it kind of love for you from above? Or?
No, not at all. There was absolutely no pressure on my becoming a lawyer. And it certainly wasn't a conversion on the road to Damascus or anything like that. Quite the opposite, possibly. As a teenager, like most teenagers, I hadn't got a clue what I wanted to do. And when my father put me on the spot and said, "So what do you want to do?" My first thought, I don't know, maybe architecture, maybe accountancy. I enjoyed mathematics a lot. And so he went off to the UK and from business trip, and he returned with a couple of career booklets, one for architecture, one for accountancy. And I said, "What about law?" And he said, "You didn't mention law." So I had absolutely no pressure. But then after completing my A-levels, where I did English, history, and maths, and maths were very difficult to do with the arts, they don't combine well. And I decided what I really enjoyed was English and history, and that to me pointed me towards law because it's the use of English and the historical precedent. So it was quite a late decision to turn to the law, but I certainly enjoyed it, loved it, and haven't looked back. So I guess in the end it was in the blood.
And obviously you've gone through, and now you lead the firm.
Yeah.
Do you feel, you know, with you know, Gibraltar's oldest law firm, does that feel any pressure now to take that family legacy and lead it ever?
I think it does. I feel very, very responsible towards developing the firm and making sure it continues for many years to come. And it's definitely been my one priority. Yes, I think it's very important, very connected with the local community. We're very much a local firm. You know, even our website is gibraltarlawyers.com. So we're very much linked into that. I think as a firm, we try and think differently. I think of our firm very much as one firm, one team working together. So we have great emphasis on respecting each other, working together, and very much supporting the local community. So we cover all areas of law, and that's very important to us.
So, you know, with Gibraltar, look, famously, I sat down and interviewed James Levy from Hassan's, and I think I was asked him probably the most silly question I've probably asked anyone, which was, why were there so many lawyers in Gibraltar? Which he kind of gave me an excellent answer, but I take that as well. There's so many legal firms here in Gibraltar. What makes, if you had to think of one thing that makes these lists different, what would that be?
Oh my goodness. I think it's our total connection with the community. I think that's, I really have to stress that. We feel very committed to the community, and it's just not just in terms of the legal services we provide through legal aid, pro bono work, mainly to charities. But very much we think, you know, environmental, ESG is extremely important to us. And in fact, on our website, you'll find that we have an ESG page totally dedicated toward ESG. And it's not just paying lip service to it. Climate change is the largest factor facing our planet. So we have to deal with it in our own small way, helping cutting electricity, air conditioning, all these sort of things. And to ensure that we're fully committed, we carry out an annual carbon footprint. We set targets, and in fact, we're the first Gibraltar law firm to become a member of the UN initiative Climate Neutral Now. So we are committed to the pledge, and we're committed to contribute to accelerate the huge change needed to reach global net zero by 2050. And as a result of these efforts, we were awarded second place last year in the Gibraltar Sustainable Awards, organized by the Nautilus Project, and of course yourselves, the GFSB. So that represents our effort and commitment to promote sustainability. And we have a dedicated partner, Sarah Bray, very committed to ESG. So we have green areas in the office, we have recycling bins, we've got rid of paper and plastic cups. Every person is given a metal sustainable water bottle to refill daily. And everything is looked at and checked through independent assessors. So it's a very big commitment to the local community, and that's very much where I see, not necessarily, I'm not saying the only firm that do this, but I think we're certainly leading the way. And obviously making a difference locally. Every employee is encouraged to take a day off for charity, a charity day a year. And obviously we set up the Peter J. Isler Foundation when my father died, in his honor, and very much in my mother's as well, who was with the Gibraltar Red Cross for over 50 years. And so through that, we've raised over £400,000 that we've raised and donated to the community. During COVID, some may remember that I cycled 50 kilometers a day, and my partner Neil Costa did a half marathon for 7 days, and he said, if we raise over 50,000, I'll do it for 14 days. So he did it for 14 days because we raised over 100,000, but I was smart enough not to raise my commitment, which was hard enough as it was. And we're involved in Cowper House, in Young Enterprise. And I really, really see us as a law firm that's integrated and committed to the local community. And that's, for us, the most important aspect.
Well, that's a lot of charity and kind of stuff that you do in the community. And actually, Isla's does enjoy a strong presence. You know, I think you know, people know the family, the brand, and what you guys do. Would you like the community to perceive Isla's, apart from all the charity stuff that you're doing?
I think very much as a firm connected with the community, available to the community, and that we really cover all areas of law. I think it's the continuity to have a law firm that's now over 125 years old. Obviously, I want to make sure it's 225 years old, although I won't be around for that much longer. So it's instilling that sort of community, both inside and outside the office. I go back to what I mentioned about our being, you know, one law firm, one team, working together, supporting each other.
That brings me on really nicely to my next question. Leading such a firm and having the kind of the legacy from your family and wanting to lead that and grow that, how would you describe your leadership style and what role you play with that?
It's difficult. You probably have to ask someone else.
It's always an awkward question.
Okay, I guess my leadership style is very much leading from the front. I never ask anyone to do anything I'm not prepared to do myself, and it's right across the whole firm. I think in my younger days, I was probably quite hard. I was sort of expected everyone to be at their desk at 9 a.m. I expected everyone to be working as hard as I was. So I was probably a bit harsh and unbearable at the time. But I hope that over the years I've mellowed. But I guess other people will tell you whether I have or not. And but I do believe in hard work. I believe in smart work, and I also believe in always trying to improve what we do in every aspect. I hate if someone says, we've been doing like this for years. That for me is like a red flag. Well, you know, why haven't we changed it? We've got to improve. And I think during COVID it was a great eye opener. I mean, our HR, our IT team were absolutely brilliant. We were seamlessly working from home remotely, and so we learned a lot from, you know, I never heard of Zoom or Teams at the time. And obviously now they're very much part of our lives. And we do use it in trying to help us with our ESG credentials in, for example, trying to discourage travel where it's not necessarily business travel, and to use things like Team and Engage digitally with our clients wherever possible. So we've learned a lot, you know, working from home, the environment is changing, and we always have to be looking at new ways of working.
I think with COVID, many of our listeners and definitely lots of my my guests have described it as a before and after, right? Yeah. And kind of something that has to have driven a lot of change. You mentioned that when you started, you were hard, you know, you're a hard leader, right? What has led to you being mellowed out, as you mentioned?
Probably age. Probably age. I think actually for me the biggest difference is when you start having children and suddenly you realize the pressures that perhaps I hadn't recognized before I had children. Start having children and perhaps having to do that. So becoming more flexible, more understanding naturally as you get older, as you have a family. And of course, I'm very fortunate now to have my daughter working with me, so that gives me an extra incentive as well.
Peter, I know you're an incredibly busy man. You sit in lots of different boards and committees. What keeps you motivated?
It's very simple. I love what I do. You've got to choose a career or a job that you love doing. And if you do that, then everything follows. I mean, I love working with the people I'm working with. I enjoy the law, and I enjoy all aspects of leading a business of this nature. And obviously, also we also have the fiduciary side, which has grown over the years, which has been very, very rewarding. And so, if you do what you love, it's almost not a job anymore. So that's why, you know, I'm now 65, but I have no plans to retire, and I keep on coming to the office every day, as I mentioned. Obviously having my daughter there is an extra incentive, when you've got your family there. But as I said, you know, my partners, everyone around, it's great to have them around. I enjoy, we work closely together. We support each other in every way, not just in the law, but privately. So it works really, really well.
So would you say that you've achieved balance in your kind of work, non-work life? Or
today I think so. Right. I certainly take more holidays. But I guess 30 years ago, when I was developing a law firm, and particularly developing fiduciary with my brothers Albert and also Lawrence, it was very much a part for that. That was really full-on hard work, and I guess I had absolutely no balance at the time. But I still thoroughly enjoyed it. I enjoyed the growth we achieved through fiduciary. We had offices all over the place. It was a great journey, a great story. But with hindsight, I probably wish I spent more time with my family, and I'm sure a lot of people say that. As they say, when you're on your deathbed, no one ever says, I wish I'd worked harder. So I guess finding that balance, I'm finding it in later life rather than during the years when I was, you know, fully 110% on developing useless fiduciary. and all the other things. But you've got to enjoy it. You've got to enjoy these things.
Yeah, I think also there is time for hard work. I think in my personal experience anyway, I think there are times and stages in your life where you are working a lot. But if you, as I said, if you're enjoying it, then it's about maybe changing that chip. And I think for me, it's definitely helped thinking you are working, but you're also building, right? And I think I find that definitely in my career. I was just curious to see someone who has and is leading and is much further ahead. It's refreshing to hear that as well.
Yeah. What I think is very important is obviously health and the balance. So my weekends, I definitely don't work anymore. And I'm an avid cyclist, so you'll see me cycling up to Jimena and San Pablo, and on a brave day, all the way up to Garcia. Wow. I do that with friends, and in fact, my nephew, Mark Garcia, who's the medical director of the hospital, he often comes with me, which is good. I've got a doctor on hand just in case I push too hard. But to be honest, he's normally pushing me harder. But yeah, it's finding that balance. Finding that
and sport,
balance,
I guess, thinking, keeping fit and wellness and things comes into play, right?
It's so important. Yeah, you have to have that balance.
One of the reasons I mentioned balance, and I guess again it's a theme that comes through in many of the conversations I have, is that traditionally, you know, and the legal profession has had a bit of a reputation for burnout, say. So, and it's not just me saying it, the International Bar Association flagged burnout as a global phenomenon in the legal profession. A recent study found 2/3 of legal professionals have experienced burnout. What's your take on that finding, and what's Isla's approach to it?
Yeah, I think a burnout is a real factor, and it's not necessarily because you're working 80 hours a day. It affects people in different ways, and I think in Gibraltar, within law firms, have a reasonable balance. I don't think people are working the sort of hours that, say, Magic Circle law firms work in London. So I think it's slightly different. I don't think it's just about the lawyers. It's about the employees, the partners, the firm as a whole. So, you know, mental well-being is essential. COVID was very hard on many people. I don't think we realized how hard COVID was till after the event and the stress that we were under. I mean, as I mentioned before, we adapted amazingly well during COVID, but mental health awareness is not something new. It wasn't something as a result of COVID. We have a very active intranet, and one of the main headings of ThinkingClick is well-being. And we work with a company, TELUS Health, so we have a lot of online support and resources, and it doesn't just stop there. We also use a local company, Auxilium, to help people. Sometimes in working smarter to manage their stress levels, and that way find more balance in the workplace, and that's available to everyone. I have a terrific HR team who are also very supportive, and I personally have an open door policy, and I often discuss with partners and lawyers, employees who may be struggling in other areas, and help them and help them find a way through it, but it's very important. So business like a company like Auxilium, Kirsten Andlaw, she's really good. It's very much almost a lifestyle coach. Sometimes that's what you need at the first level. Then obviously if it gets this worse and you're having other mental issues, then we're very aware of that and have to keep an eye out. So I'm very conscious of actually, and it's quite amusing, there's a couple of particular lawyers where when I'm leaving the office, say, why are you still here?
Right.
You know, you've got to go, don't do what I did. Do what I say, not what I do, in a positive way. So I want people, I think someone who's been working hard in the office from 9 to 6 needs to go home and not stay late. So I mean, that's part of it, keeping an eye out, keeping that balance within the firm.
I think it's interesting that you mentioned that, you know, it's not just about if you're working 80 hours. And I think we're living in an age now with overwhelm. Yeah. We've all got devices, news seems to be going from bad to worse. So I think maybe there is, it's a mix, you know, of people maybe working too hard in an environment that pushes them, but maybe it's also what else is going on outside, maybe.
Well, thankfully, my children are older, So I haven't had to worry about that phase for my children and with social media and the internet and everything that is available there and can be so stressful to people. There's a lot of social pressure through Instagram, what other people are doing, why aren't I doing it? Of course, they're doing it for that week. They're not doing it all the time. We've seen different people do it.
Yeah, and
am I missing out? So there's that there's incredible peer social pressure on people, which thankfully I never had, and my children were slightly before.
I think absolutely. There's a whole, you know, we could have a whole conversation about that.
Completely.
Back in the day, I grew up and I didn't have social media, right? So when you compared yourself to your peers, they were your peers in your professional life or your school when you're growing up. Right now, you've got kids and people working. You're comparing yourself to people in America, in London, in Singapore. So it really amplifies that pressure. Mm-hmm. Right? So yeah. How do we get over that? How do we manage that?
I don't know what the answer is. You've got to, on one side, embrace it, and other side, control it and manage it, and just remember that's not reality. And reality is yeah. walking down the street and seeing that you know that's reality. And also have to realize that you know, in Gibraltar and our community, we're very, very fortunate. We are, relatively speaking, the majority well off. And I mean, not completely. That's why from our charities, we try and help local charities, particularly, you know, company like Childline, Clubhouse, so that covers children and mental issues and things. And we've got to be aware that there's still a lot of issues within our community. But relatively speaking, on a global scale, we're doing pretty well, so we have to
recognize that and keep that. I think, and also any parents, younger people, is kind of reassure them that it's not real. You know, I think that puts a lot of pressure on them. Talking about again the big issues, Peter, I'm really sorry of asking one of the big things, and that's relatively new, is AI. Now, AI as a technology has been around for a long time, but in the last kind of 12 months or so, generative AI has been increasingly being implemented, rolled out in many businesses internationally and here on the Rock. Generative AI means programs like ChatGPT that can generate work and output. Is Isilis embracing? Have you got a policy? Well, what's your take on AI?
Well, I think I've just finished reading a book called How AI Thinks by Nigel Toon. It was a real eye-opener, obviously. So I think AI has got many positive benefits. I think sometimes in the press you see the negative, what can happen, how it can be used. But it has so many possibilities of enhancing our growth in medicine. You can number crunch if you think of, you know, the calculator when it first came out. Yeah. I remember my father back in 64 when he went to the United Nations, Joshua San, coming back with a calculator. It was like a big box. And he didn't show us. He had it at the lunch table and he'd say, what's 83 times 82? That sort of thing. And he'd give the answer. So it can be that sort of leap change, helping in developing medicines and things. And of course, it's going to be very disruptive in the legal profession. I mean, so far, yes, we're using ChatGPT, I think mainly in our marketing, business development, and things like that. But I do find it quite amusing. I was trying to find last week if there was a UK equivalent for a Canadian law that I found, which would be quite useful if we had it in Gibraltar in the private client space. And I was about to ask a young lawyer to look at it, and I thought, I'll ask ChatGPT. And I immediately got back, no, we don't have, you know, UK law or English law doesn't have that, but it does have ABCD. So then what it meant was that what I then gave the young lawyer to look at was, okay, look into ABCD.
Much more special.
So it saved an enormous amount of time, and that's what's going to happen. It's going to save time. It's going to improve services. It's going to help with the type of advice you give. There's going to be a lot more, if you like, the number crunching side of going through laws and finding precedents is going to be done by things like GBT or the enterprise version for firms and lawyers. So I think there's a lot of positive benefits. And you're never going to take out the human element. You still need to sit around a table, give the advice, knock back ideas. That's going to happen. But it means you're going to get there much quicker. Yeah. So it's going to benefit, I think, lawyers, more quality of work, and clients, more quality of product.
With, it's great to know that you are reading up on it and you're kind of seeing where it's coming from. With marketing communications, it's definitely changed things. I sometimes use it as almost like a junior, to do that kind of the heavy lifting at the start. But the legal profession for me has always been a profession that charges on its price strategy, I guess, is around time. How does that balance with a tool that maybe reduces that? I don't know.
Time, everyone hates time recording. Lawyers hate time as much as clients do, I can tell you. Some people leave the law because they've had enough of timesheets and things. It just seems to be the mechanism for charging for lawyers. So it's not great. There's a lot of competition. I mean, if you look at it locally, the prices that clients achieve, fixed fee prices for example, conveyancing is really, really low. And they're still getting a full service for it. So I think it's brilliant in those areas. And then for the larger commercial clients, yes, it is based on time. But I see it as positive because you don't want to spend all that time sort of researching. You want to spend the time advising. So if you can get the advice quicker, and we do want to give value to clients. So we ourselves are sometimes horrified by how much time we have to spend on things and tend to cut back on things and hourly rates. So to have a mechanism that can get you quicker to that point is going to help everybody. It really
it's
is
going to be a tremendous
benefit.
Right?
I think it's going to be hugely efficient. If instead of going to the old volumes of Laws of Gibraltar, thankfully it's now on online. And there's Jib Law, Patrick Ahuana has developed that very well. So the resources are already there, which are helping us in that. So, I mean, we talk of artificial intelligence, but in a way, Google already is to a certain extent.
We're talking about
developing it to help us to be more effective, so you're getting more to the point quicker. So now I see so many positives. I think it's really, really positive. And don't forget, it's very positive for learning as well.
Absolutely, you've got it's almost like that comparison of on a negative how it's bad that we're comparing ourselves sometimes on social media to people in different parts of the world. I think just having this kind of technology at our fingertips can be a really, really good thing. Last week, I spoke to the new CEO at Macedonia, and they are embracing AI as well. So it's good to see these big local firms doing so.
Yes, and also, I sit on the boards of gaming companies and things, and I see them embracing it very much in their due diligence and in their anti-money laundering. So there are areas which we're not using it in yet. But which enhance. I think the gaming community are ahead of the game because they're dealing with so many players, and it's very, very important that they can use artificial intelligence, even mental well-being, trying to assess their punters and things. So there's a lot of positive potential.
Flipping it now, and from a litigation, I guess, point of view, what are some of the challenges? Like, how does the law tackle some of the challenges presented by AI?
Well, I think, I'm not a litigator, but I think for litigation, it definitely helps in research, which is really, really important. When you're preparing pleadings and things, you want to get there as quickly as possible. You don't want to spend hours, days researching, especially if some are dead ends. Mm. So artificial intelligence is going to help enormously in analyzing the law. And I think it's going to help local businesses, it's going to help the community because they themselves will be able to use certain tools without even having to go to lawyers. So there are benefits right through the community.
Peter, again, I feel really bad because I'm asking all these big questions. The treaty, I think this is something, again, it's tough, but it is a question that it's been part of every single discussion I've had, I think, since the very start of this podcast. And seeing it evolve and develop is kind of, and see it through the lens of the different people I'm interviewing is super interesting. What are your views or expectations on the treaty negotiations?
I think part of the problem is that we don't know, devil's in the detail. We don't know what's in the treaty. So I think the treaty will be very important for ensuring frontier flow or no frontier, and that increases the flow. That will help the larger business, in particular in Gibraltar. It will help the main street because there'll be more footfall. So perhaps the main street will maybe less sort of price focused, but more the type of shop and the type of, so it becomes an experience shopping in Gibraltar, for example. So I think there's lots of benefits coming from the treaty, or should come from the treaty. But we don't know if there's going to be additional taxes and things like that, which then may affect and change the way we do business. For example, obviously GFSB very conscious of how it might affect wholesalers and retailers, and that's a side that we don't really know yet. So I think the jury's out on that side. But I have, you know, great confidence in Fabian Bigardo and his team to deliver a treaty. It's really, really hard. I mean, as a lawyer dealing with contracts generally, trying to deal with all the different aspects, and a treaty has to cover all sorts of aspects, you know, from ID cards, Schengen, it's such a huge, that people shouldn't underestimate how difficult the task that Fabian has set himself is. But I think, you know, they're working around the clock on it. We've never had better relationships with Spain or the UK, for that matter, in my lifetime. I know what they were like in the times of my father and Hassan's, and believe me, they were nothing like they are today. Tremendous support, tremendous communication, and I have to take my hat off. I mean, Fabian has achieved that with his team. They keep on working as well with the Labour Party, which is very important as a change of government in the UK. But so I am very positive about the treaty. I don't think it's the end all. I don't think by any means that if we don't have a treaty and we remain in the frontier, we're outside Schengen, we have the protection of EU law, we're a third party border. You know, we haven't changed, we're still like that. We're outside Schengen as we are today. So yes, we may have to suffer bad frontier flows if we didn't have a treaty, but I'm increasingly confident that we're going to have a treaty anyway. But I think it's very important for your listeners that if we don't have a treaty, we still have a vibrant economy, and we will continue. I don't see that changing. We've got tremendous, you know, the gaming community is fully developed, it's resilient, it's growing. You know, we all thought after Brexit, you know, the day after the Brexit vote, we were down. And look how property prices have increased. And I think it's great. You know, things like the 50-50 projects, they bring people back to Gibraltar, affordable prices. We're growing our economy. We're growing our people. So I see. I don't think if we don't have a treaty, it'd be great to have a treaty, because obviously a lot of, you know, in the GFSB space, a lot of wholesalers, retailers are holding back on investments. Although you've seen some have just gone ahead.
I think now, this is it.
What do they do is probably hardest for wholesalers, because how's it going to work on the wholesale and the frontier? But you're still seeing Gibraltar business develop, and I do think Spain has completely changed. You know, we're not dealing with General Franco. We're not dealing with a fascist regime. There may still be right-wing elements that there are in every country. But we're dealing with a revolved, a developed democracy who cannot ignore the 12, 15,000 people resident in Spain, many Spaniards who are coming into Gibraltar to work, who are adding to the economy. They want, you know, Gibraltarians, we earn in Gibraltar, we largely spend in Spain. They want that to continue. So I think that economic growth, even if there wasn't a deal, they would find a way of making a free-flowing frontier. So I'm confident. I'm very positive about the future of Gibraltar.
Brilliant. And I think, you know, there's a lot of... I think people want clarity, right? But when the question, what does that mean? What does that mean? We, as a community, have lived under uncertainty in some way.
Yeah.
For a long, long time. So if it's not the treaty, it's something else. So I think, you know, that's it's not the be-all and end-all, is whichever outcome it is, right?
Yeah. I think I'd just like to mention, because just went on a bit about Fabian, but obviously I think Joseph Garcia is doing a lot of the nitty-gritty, doing a great job, and Albert Mena, I think, although he's now back at Assange, I think continues to be involved, very important factor, and obviously Michael Yamas, the Attorney General, and no doubt many others I've mentioned, because I don't know who's involved. But you know, I've been practicing for over 40 years, and I don't think we've ever been in a better position.
Talking now, looking towards the future, and then we've got a couple more questions.
Yes.
We're nearly there. What's your, you know, this is, we've talked about global context, we talked about the treaty. What are your hopes for the future of Isla as the firm?
I think that we keep continue to grow very much as part of the community. Be very aware of our community obligations. I'm now trying to develop the Peter J. Easter Foundation further with all our family companies, and once I've developed at that stage, then I hope to get other companies involved with it, because I think together we can do a lot more than individually. So whilst the foundation was really started by Easterlers and fiduciary, we're now involving other family companies, Europort, Goldband, and things like that, so we can grow, fund it to a greater extent. And that's very much, you know, talk about legacy and things, that's very much my concentration in it. So really, a community law firm, very much Gibraltar lawyers, and seeing that growth and trying to get that message, that thought throughout the firm for many years to come.
When you look kind of back now, obviously we look just look forward, but flipping that to the very, very start, have you got any advice, A, that you were given that has kind of driven you through your career, and then B, any advice also that you might have to someone who is starting out their career, doesn't know which way to go, and is thinking about law?
Yeah, well, I think the thing about law, it's not a job, it's a profession. So if you just have to make sure you're doing it for the right reasons if you want to become a lawyer. And you need to dedicate a lot of time to it and hard work, especially when you're studying for it, to develop as a lawyer, when you're training to develop as a lawyer. So it's not for everybody. So just make sure it's what you want to do. It's not something to go into just because you want a job. You know, sometimes people go in, you know, lawyers make money. Yes, but it's hard work. And it can be very rewarding, both personally and financially. But make sure you want to be a lawyer. Life is too short not to be enjoying what you do. But if you love it, enjoy it, you embrace it, it can be rewarding in every sense. But a lot of hard work, and there's nothing you can't get around. AI is not going to help you. It's a lot of hard work to get there. Well, it will help you, obviously, learning and stuff, but you need to do it. You need to have the knowledge, because at the end of the day, for all AI's benefits, it's not a human brain, and it can't analyze things in the same way. So you still need to get all the information and then be quite analytical yourself. Nobody understands a human brain. That's what I learned from the book. They're almost trying to copy certain aspects of it. So they can perfect certain aspects of it, rather like an accounting, adding and subtracting. But in the end, you need someone else to look at the overview and look at things in general. But look, it's a great profession. I've been at it for 42 years, and I'm not planning to stop anytime soon. And if you embrace it, love it, fantastic. Love to see more people joining the law. And you're welcome to knock at Easler's door if you want to train or do pupillage or whatever.
Peter, thank you, and how busy you are. So again, thank you for your time today. Thank you.
Pleasure. Thank you very much for having me.
GFSB, Member Spotlight.
So Kirsten, thanks for joining me on the podcast today.
Thank you very much for having me.
Congratulations on your recent launch. You launched a new website. Tell me about that.
Yes. So we launched a new website. Basically, we went through a rebrand. And the reason being was to just mainly align our external communication, our website and all our marketing to what we're actually doing. Because I guess like every business, it evolves and it transforms. And so have we. So we've now become Thrive as One Consulting.
So tell me about that's Thrive as One, like Thrive Magazine for the GFSB,
yes.
But nothing to do with them. Tell me about Thrive as One Consulting.
So we are a boutique consulting network, and we really focus on supporting organizations around their culture and leadership transformation. Yeah, I can go into a lot of detail.
Well, actually, I spoke to Peter Isola from Isola's, and he mentioned that you've worked with them on certain things. How do you usually work with your clients?
Our approach is really non-linear. So it really is based on what the organization needs at the time. And I feel we're really lucky to work with quality clients. And what I mean by that, with clients that really want to create change. They really want to operate as an organization that has a positive impact, not just on the bottom line, but with all stakeholders. And so depending on where the focus is for the organization, we support them. Quite often it's around developing the culture, developing progressive ways of working, leadership development, because ultimately we all know the tone is set at the top, working with a values-based approach to help the organization make that positive impact on their bottom line, on their clients, their suppliers, their partners, their people, their employees.
So adding value, right? Because a lot of time, you know, coaching, a lot of this kind of work that you do, how can it benefit the bottom line, right? So I know that our listeners are thinking a lot of the time on budget, on how they can maybe be more effective. Can coaching help them with that?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. So obviously, let's use a team as an example. The way a group of people, a team, works together ultimately determines how effective and high-performing they're going to be, which ultimately is going to have an impact on the bottom line. And our focus is really in that space of how do we support people to work at their highest potential, step into their highest potential, and work together collaboratively to perform at a very high level across the whole organization, keeping in mind that they are part of a wider system. So part of a community, part of a society, part of the environment and the ecosystem. And we want to link all of those aspects together, because ultimately we can only thrive if everything else around us is thriving too, hence the name.
Because another thing that you are involved very heavily with is the GIBSAM's Wellbeing at Work Conference.
Yes, and we're really excited. So this year we have, the conference will take place on the 9th of May, and the title is Sustaining Success Amidst Overwhelm and Burnout. And I think a lot of people and a lot of organizations can relate to that, because we can see it all around us. We have Amy Bradley coming as the keynote speaker. She published two books on workplace well-being. One is particularly focused on burnout, so she's doing our keynote. And we'll also have a lot of local expertise and experts coming to facilitate breakout rooms. Last year in the conference, we managed to achieve an environment where there was a lot of engagement, a lot of dialogue, and we're aiming to do the same this year. So buy your
tickets. Last year's conference, yeah, I did attend last year's conference, and it was in May. Is it going to be in the May again this year?
Yes, 9th of May.
And tickets are out now?
Yes.
So Kirsten, thank you for joining me today, and thanks for coming in to speak to our listeners about the conference.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And that's a wrap for this episode of the Gibraltar Business Podcast. Thank you to our guests, Peter Isola from Isola's and Kirsten Andlaw from Thrive as One Consulting. Thank you to all the team at the GFSB, our sponsor, the Gibraltar International Bank, and everyone who contributes to the project and keeps the podcast going from strength to strength. I hope you've enjoyed listening. Remember, you can catch up on any episodes you've missed anytime you like. So for now, it's a goodbye from me. Until then, keep focused on your journey and reach for your business goals. See you very, very soon.